White letters slot into place like train destinations on a display board. Thorny MI Screen Entertainment presents a Michael Codron film. Now train times. Norwich 10:25, Plymouth 10:27. In green digital style lettering, Clockwise, an original screenplay by Michael Frayn, starring John Cleese, Penelope Wilton, Alison Steadman and Stephen Moore. Head teacher Brian Stimpson, a tall man with short black receding hair and a moustache, stands before the big picture windows in his office, surveying his domain. Groups of kids in uniform trickle into the busy playground below. Also starring Joan Hickson, Benjamin Whitrow, Michael Aldridge and Jeffrey Palmer. The pupils are dressed in light-coloured shirts, dark-coloured trousers or skirts, jumpers, blazers and ties. Groups of boys are enthusiastically playing football in the yard. Girls gather together to chat or stroll around with their bags slung over their shoulders. Teenagers lean against the brick wall near the toilets. All of this preschool activity is carefully surveyed by Brian from his office eyrie. Three boys are roughing up a fourth. Brian, who's holding a sheaf of notes in one hand, lifts up a pair of binoculars and peers at the boys through the window. The bullies spot Brian watching them. They nudge each other and let their schoolmate go, quietly picking up their school bags and going about their business. The bullied child straightens his jacket and gazes up at Brian. Brian walks to another large window at the other end of his office, the walls of which are adorned with school timetables. He spots three lads poring over a smutty magazine and grabs a microphone, broadcasting to the schoolyard through speakers.
Right, Orange, Popple, Patel, 9:20.
Some loose pages fall out of the magazine. Brian turns away and reads from the notes he's holding.
I feel deeply humble. 5 years ago, if I may be personal for a moment, a rather overawed headmaster of a rather obscure maintained comprehensive school.
Brian grabs the phone.
Can you make 3:30 Monday or 4:30 Tuesday?
No, 10:35 on Thursday or 12:10 Friday.
Can't do, I'm afraid.
He notes the time, 8:52.
Or we could say 11:10 Friday week.
He spots a latecomer.
Don't run, Sharon Seeds, 9:20.
Sharon walks across the playground. Brian takes up his notes.
Arrived at the annual meeting for the first time, amazed to find himself invited to become one of your very select handful of additional members. Come in. He listened to the headmasters of schools with great and glorious names. Come in. Great and glorious names.
Headmaster.
Eton and Harrow, Winchester and Westminster.
Am I taking 4H in G3 at 10:30?
As they expatiated upon a variety of weighty matters, and scarcely did our nervous new boy open his mouth.
Sorry, this is your thing with all the posh schools.
4H in G3 at 10:30.
2:15, okay, Brian.
Jones says I'm taking 4H in G3 at 10:30. I thought I was taking 4J and J3 at 11.
Peter Stiles is taking 4H and G3 at 10:30. Right, Ted, 2:15.
Slay him at the conference, Brian. Tell all those upper-class ponces we're going to hang them from the lamppost by their old-school ties.
Right, thank you, Ted. You're taking 4G and H3 at 10:35.
Oh, God.
The two staff leave.
Try having 4G at Harrow.
Well, that obscure comprehensive school was none other than Thomas Tompion.
He looks up expectantly.
And that overawed new boy was none other than me. Little did he, within a few short years, he would be standing up here himself as the very first comprehensive school headmaster ever.
He spots a pupil.
Become chairman of the headmaster's conference.
Clint.
The boy looks
Don't
up.
You think you're going, Clint, the Guinness Book of Records? Every day this term so far, isn't it, Clint? Well, don't just stand there, Clint. Run!
Brian watches the boy stroll off.
9:20, Clint. And come out from that doorway. Not you, you. Yes, you. I can see the smoke, you fool. I can see your feet.
A teacher emerges from the doorway of the boy's loos. Mr. Jolly sheepishly stubs out his cigarette. Pupils gather for assembly in the school hall. The staff sit in two rows on the stage. A clock on the wall clicks on from 8:59 to 9 precisely as Brian appears on an upper landing. The staff and pupils stand as Brian strides into the hall and steps smartly down the aisle to the stage with a clipboard under his arm. He stands behind a lectern in his grey suit and tie and gestures for the pupils and staff to sit down.
Right, now I've got some sad news for you all. I'm going to be away today. I knew you'd be heartbroken. Right, now where am I going? I am going to the University of Norwich in the fair county of Norfolk. And why am I going there? I am going there because that's where this year's annual meeting of the Headmasters' Conference is being held, and you can all feel rather proud of yourselves. Because they don't let just any old headmasters into the Headmasters' Conference, far from it. The Headmasters' Conference is the organization to which all the great independent schools of this country belong, places like Eton and Harrow, Winchester and Westminster. The fee-paying schools, the posh schools that we all look down our noses at, and that we'd all send our children to if only we'd got the money.
One teacher nods and smiles.
They usually let in headmasters of common or garden comprehensive schools, of schools like this one. So why, you ask, why did they let me in? Well, I'll tell you why. They let me in because you and I, all of us together, have made Thomas Tompion one of the best schools in the country.
A girl is pinched by her friend.
But today... 9:20, Linda. But today is an extra special occasion, because today, I take over as chairman of the Headmasters' Conference, and I shall be the first chairman in the whole of history, who is headmaster of an ordinary common or garden state comprehensive school. So it really is one for the Guinness Book of Records. Right then, so what am I going to tell them in my speech this afternoon? I'm going to tell them how we did it. I'm going to tell them how we all decided that we wanted a well-run, orderly school. A school where we all knew what we were supposed to be doing, Jimmy Pickett. A school where we all knew which room we were supposed to be doing it in. And I'm not looking at you, Wendy Pilbrow, or you, Gary Bottoms. And what we were supposed to be doing it with, Debbie Joe. And above all, Clint Ayling and Dean Shriver, please note.
Clint and his pal half stand up, then sit down again.
When we were supposed to be doing it!
Brian looks at the clock, which clicks on to 9:05.
Right, 122, he who would valiant be.
Everyone stands up to sing. Brian looks at the empty chair by the piano to his right and gazes quickly around his staff. Mr. Jolly enters the hall through a back door and sidles down the aisle. He pulls a hymn book out of his pocket and a pupil whispers the page number to him. Brian eyes Mr. Jolly all the way over to the piano. He sits down hurriedly and gets on with it. Later, Mr. Jolly finds a queue of kids outside Brian's door.
Here again, Gail.
A sign reads, silence.
What are you here for, Sean?
But not what are you here for?
I'm just...
He ambles past the long queue of silent pupils and acknowledges a repeat offender.
Clint.
He finds Brian's wife, Gwenda, at the front of the queue.
Hello, Mrs. Stimson. Surprised to find you lined up with the... What have you been
What?
Did you overcook the... or were you late getting him his...
Late?
He weakly admonishes two boys. Brian's door opens at 9.20 precisely.
If you think 9.20 outside my study means 11.10 in the playground, then you'll be back here at 9.20 every day until you learn to tell the time.
I told you 9.50, the train's not till 10.25. What do you want?
Please, sir, it's about starting Greek, sir.
9.20's not starting Greek. 9.20's not being driven to the railway station. What's 9.20?
Execution, sir.
Executions. Mr. Jolly?
In Brian's office.
I used to be like you, always late. Oh, yes, forever in the wrong place at the wrong time.
I know what you mean, but I just thought I ought to... one or two things... one or two problems. One or two personal...
I was like some miserable child wandering round the school with his calculator in one hand and his gym shoes in the other and not the slightest idea where he's supposed to be.
G3, Leroy.
I know the feeling, but...
We all go through it, John. We all get lost.
I'm afraid I've got into... well, I've got into...
Bed, John.
Oh, no, no, no. No, nothing like that. Well...
Try getting out of it earlier in the morning.
Oh, yes. But the thing is this...
Because the first step to knowing who we are is knowing where we are and when we are.
Mr. Jolly's confused. Unseen by Brian, a naked boy charges between classrooms. Brian strides along a walkway with his curly-haired wife.
I could drive you there.
The train doesn't go till 10.25.
You're ashamed of me, aren't you?
You could go over to the hospital.
Don't tell me you're not allowed to take wives, because if you're the chairman, you are. I know that.
Gwenda gets behind the wheel of a light brown Ford Cortina. Holding his notes, Brian folds his long limbs into the passenger seat and rests a sensible-looking green suitcase on his lap. Sour-faced Gwenda buckles up.
You could take some of your old ladies out for a drive.
I don't have to come to the dinner if that's what you're worrying about. I could go out and get a hamburger on my own.
They set off. Gwenda glances at Brian, who's going through his speech in his head.
This is a historic moment. I stand before you today as your new chairman.
I said I could go out and get a hamburger in McDonald's.
Good, good. And did Paul get off to school on time?
Gwenda shoots him an irritated look and drives on past a row of council houses. Gwenda pulls up in front of the station and Brian gets out of the car.
Right, so you'll find somewhere to park.
Park?
Make sure the train's running. If it's not, you'll have to drive me there.
Gwenda drives off. The station clock reads 10.19.
Platform 3, 10.25 to Norwich.
Brian checks his watch and strides across the station concourse, approaching a grey-haired ticket inspector at the platform gate.
On time. Where are we?
On the left.
Right.
On the left, Governor. Train on the left.
Glenn Scully and Mandy Costakis!
Two punky teenagers near a photo booth.
Yes!
Strangers turn to stare.
Right. Tomorrow then? 9.20!
He taps his watch and the teenagers slope off.
Right. On the left then.
Right.
Right?
Right.
Brian walks away from the perplexed ticket inspector and gets on the train on the right. He's a seat in first class across the aisle from a gentleman reading the Times. Brian gets out his notes and goes over the speech in his mind.
This is a historic moment. I stand before you today as your new chairman, something that few of us ever expected to see happen in our lifetime.
Brian is nodding his head to emphasize points and looks up to find the man opposite staring. Embarrassed, Brian puts the notes down on the seat next to him.
Something that few of us ever expected to see in our lifetime.
Brian notices a guard standing by the train on the left as a station clock clicks onto 10.25.
This is the train for Norwich.
Plymouth.
Plymouth?
That was Norwich on the left.
Brian leaps up, running back for his case, but forgetting his speech notes, he jumps off the train and runs over to the other one, which is just pulling out.
Wait! Stop!
The Times reader watches with astonishment. The train pulls away and Brian stops. Gwenda approaches the gate.
10:25 to Norwich.
You've missed it.
It's on time. It is running.
It's run. It's gone. That's it.
That's all right then.
Brian spots Gwenda walking away.
Gwenda!
Brian charges up the platform towards the inspector at the gate.
You can tell the difference between left and right.
You said Norwich. That's Plymouth. You didn't want Norwich.
Brian remembers.
Speech!
Speech? What now?
Wait! Stop!
I've asked me to do some damn silly things as I've stood here, but no one's ever asked me to make a speech before.
Come on, try this one then. Plymouth, this one.
Brian knocks on the train window. The Times reader stares at Brian as the Plymouth train leaves. Brian straightens up.
He's back. You want the speech before you go, do you?
Norwich.
My lords, ladies and gentlemen.
Next one to Norwich.
247, change Peterborough. He didn't like it.
Brian runs into the car park. Gwenda puts on her seatbelt and moves off, oblivious to Brian pounding down the concrete car park behind her.
Wait.
Gwenda passes through a toll gate.
Stop.
Gwenda drives off and the bar lowers, stopping Brian from running on. A taxi takes Brian to a suburban-looking house.
Keep going, Governor. It's never too late till the last moment's gone. Just so long as your wife hasn't taken the car.
As the taxi's turning round, Brian slides open the garage door and finds the garage empty. He's opening the front door as the taxi goes. Brian tries to stop the cab, then goes in.
Gwenda!
A teenager in pyjamas appears at the top of the stairs.
Gwenda! No. Where the hell is she? Oh, you're here. Where's Mum? Don't tell me at the school.
Yeah, I think she's...
I know she was at the school, you idiot. Where'd she go after that? Don't say the station.
Yeah, I think she says...
God give me strength.
He charges outside.
Where is she now?
Brian legs it back into the house.
She's not at the hospital. She's not driving old ladies around the countryside.
Dunno, she might have said...
She's at the hospital.
He dashes out, then walks back in again.
Why aren't you at school?
Well, I've got a...
You've got a free. Of course you've got a free. Only you haven't got a free.
No, I've...
You've got a study period!
He runs out.
I've got a hangover.
Brian runs along the grass verge without his suitcase.
Taxi! Taxi!
Brian checks his watch and starts to run. His attention is captured by an approaching white taxi, and he doesn't notice a blue Morris 1100 pulling out of a drive up ahead.
Taxi!
The white taxi speeds by and Brian falls over the bonnet of the blue Morris. Startled, he recovers enough to notice the young blue-eyed woman who's staring back at him from behind the wheel.
Please, sir. I'm terribly sorry, Mr. Stimpson, sir.
Laura?
I'm sorry, Mr. Stimpson. I've got a free.
Right. Laura, hospital.
Oh.
Brian clambers into the passenger seat. The little blue Morris rounds a corner and turns left onto a main road.
Right. Not far out of your way. It's not a free, Laura. It's a study period. Study periods are not frees. This is your parents' car, is it, Laura?
They don't mind.
Well, A-levels this year, Laura. You can't afford to go driving around the district in study periods. You're a prefect. You should be setting an example. Right. Left.
Laura, who's in the upper sixth and has short wavy brown hair, drives into the hospital grounds, passing two staff, and parks up near a hedge.
Right. Wait here. Do you mind waiting? I don't know where she goes.
I'm only missing biology.
Brian scrutinises a set of signs, then runs off into one of the main brick-built hospital buildings. Gwenda helps three elderly ladies out of a smaller building near the car park.
Now, the liqueur glasses came to me from their mother.
Mind the step.
Actually, Jeannie's always had her eye on them. So she said, Ellie, it's no use letting Lou have the sherry glasses. She won't appreciate them. She won't polish them. You know what she's like. So I said, well, all right. I've no desire to burden people with possessions they don't want, I said. That's not my intention and never has been. So naturally, she thought if the sherry glasses aren't going to Lou, they'd be going to Pam. But I thought to myself, wait a moment, Ellie.
Keep moving, Mrs. Trellis. Nearly there.
Hold on a moment, Ellie, I thought.
Are we going to the hospital? We're at the hospital, Mrs. Wheel. We're just going to have a little look at the country.
How lovely. Oh, isn't that lovely?
Not so fast, Ellie, I thought. If Pam gets them, she'll give them to Babs. We all know what she'll do.
Aren't we lucky? Are we going to the hospital?
Don't worry, Mrs. Wheel. We'll come back to the hospital just as soon as we've had a little look at the countryside.
And then I thought, well, hold on. Millie's living in Majorca. Well, what on earth is she going to do with two dozen sherry glasses? But I thought even if she wants to, I thought, how should we ever get them?
Brian charges between hospital buildings.
Aren't we lucky people?
Gwenda helps her three ladies into her brown Cortina, which is parked on the other side of the hedge from Laura's car.
Yeah, I'm old-fashioned. Maybe I don't understand modern ideas about give them this, give them that. What is the message?
Brian races into the smaller building, then comes out again as Gwenda moves off.
Yeah.
Brian rushes back over to Laura.
She's gone.
Which way, then?
A honk from behind.
Mr. Stimpson.
Laura. Laura. Will you drive me to Norwich?
OK. Where is it?
It's vital, you see, Laura. I shouldn't ask you otherwise. It's the headmaster's conference. I am the first headmaster of a maintained comprehensive school ever in the whole of history to become chairman of the headmaster's conference.
Just tell me where it is.
It's not far. Not all that far. Not too far.
I mean left or right?
Oh, right. Left.
The car lurches off.
Right. Right.
It swerves unsteadily across the main road. Brian calmly consults a map as they pull into a petrol station and stop at a pump.
163 miles.
Right.
We'll have to ring your mum. Ah, they've got a phone here. I'd better speak to her myself.
I'll do it.
I mean, not if she's the slightest bit worried about it, Laura. I'll pay for the petrol, of course.
As Laura heads off, a look of alarm passes across Brian's face. He gets out and starts to fill up. He glances across at Laura in the phone booth as he's thinking through his speech.
This is a historic moment. We are going a long way. We have come a long way. We are going 163 miles.
John, listen to me. I'm going away. It's over. No.
5 hours ago,
Norwich.
If I may be personal for a moment, I was feeling deeply historic. 5 years ago, if I may be historic for a moment, I was feeling deeply humble. An overawed master from an obscure comprehensive school.
Every time she comes to the house, she makes some little remark. Oh, Ellie, she goes. It's taken you ages.
Unnoticed, over at another pump, Gwen's filling up. Mrs. Trellis still chattering away in the back of the Cortina.
Glasses never stops. I sometimes wonder if she ever thinks about anything else. She certainly never talks about anything else. Of course, I don't say a word.
Gwenda spots Brian. She gawps open-mouthed, slowly ducking behind the car and watching him through the windows.
That came to her. Not that she's ever wound it. Not that she's so much as looked at it. From that day to this.
Brian checks his watch, then runs to Laura. Gwenda's eyes widen.
What did she say?
Oh, it's That's okay.
Really?
Got rooms in that house so filled with things that you can't open the door. She doesn't know what she's got herself.
I feel very badly about this, Laura. What are you missing? You're missing double biology.
I don't mind.
Well, you should mind, Laura. You've got A-levels and I'm taking you out of a double biology. Laura, you're going to discover that life is full of the most terrible moral choices.
In fact, I said to her the other day, I said, you know what's going to happen?
Gwenda stares, fuming.
Someone's got to sort this lot out when you've gone and it won't be dibs.
Brian and Laura walk smartly back to the Morris.
Nobody pays a slice of attention to what anyone says. I don't know why I waste my breath. I can tell you she's got a clock in that house that came from Mother that's worth every penny of £100. It's never been wound from that day to this. So when she's...
The attendant watches them drive off.
No, did they pay? They didn't pay. They never paid.
Gwenda turns to Mrs. Way.
Laura Wisely. She lives round the corner. She's one of his pupils.
How lovely.
I saw the train leave.
Isn't that lovely?
The number.
I don't believe this. There goes another one.
The Cortina hurtles onto the main road and in the opposite direction. Countryside.
Sorry, it's okay, honestly.
If Thomas Tompion is a success story, it is because we insist upon certain traditional standards.
Speech. It's on the train.
Laura stares at him, baffled. Brian continues to think his speech.
I should like, at this point, if I may, to pause for 3 hours. 160 miles in 3 hours. To pause for... say 3.5 hours. 3.5 into 160.
It's a good thing, actually. If you hadn't have come along, I might not be here now. I had this great row with this bloke. I ran back to the house and I saw the car keys and I thought, right.
We all understand, I think, that lateness is a discourtesy to others. What is sometimes forgotten these days is that it is 3.5 into 16.
It's about 50 miles an hour.
He didn't like it when I told him I was driving to Norwich with someone.
Who, he said? Who? He's so jealous.
Told him you were driving to Norwich? Told who you were driving to Norwich?
This bloke.
Brian's stunned. Mr. Jolly gets out of his blue Ford camper van outside Laura's house.
I couldn't ring Mum. She'd have gone mad.
But we can't stop again.
Brian suddenly remembers...
the petrol.
Laura's mum answers the door, holding her phone.
Mrs. Wisely?
Police?
No, Jolly, Mr. Jolly. I just wondered if Laura was... Are you Laura's... police?
Laura's at school, dear. I'm on the phone. The car's been stolen. No, it isn't the police.
They go inside.
It's someone for Laura. It's my husband. He's beside himself. Well, you'll have to come back and speak to them. Give them a description. I can't give them a description. Is it a Morris or is it an 1100? I don't know. He's in such a state, he doesn't know what he's doing. He lives for that car. He was standing outside in the drive, he goes to pieces. Is it the anti-nuclear, dear?
No, it's just that Laura's not at... I don't want to alarm you, but just thought I ought to...
Laura! She's disappeared. No one knows where she is. No, he's just said. He's here now, he's just told me. Who are you?
I'm one of the staff at the...
He's one of the staff at the...
The music.
He's the music.
Gwenda pulls up beside a grass verge outside Laura's house.
He's coming home. He doesn't know what he's doing. He's going to do someone an injury.
Mum's in apron and rubber gloves.
I don't know where she is.
Well, does she have any relations? Or, I just wondered if she had any sort of... well, in Norwich.
Is this the hospital?
Oh, no. Just wait there. Don't move.
Oh, doesn't this make a change?
Oh, it's not. It's Mrs... isn't it Mrs. Stimpson?
I'm sorry. I just...
Laura's disappeared.
She didn't tell you she was going.
Not a word, and the car's been stolen.
I'm so sorry, Mrs. Wisely. I'm so sorry.
We're waiting for the police. My husband's out of his mind with worry. He says that she's in Norwich.
Yes.
I just somehow thought perhaps... Oh, hello, Mrs. Stimpson. I just somehow wondered if...
Of course, everyone knows except me.
Well, Norwich, what can she be doing in Norwich?
I'll tell you what she's doing in Norwich. She's going to the annual meeting of the Headmaster's Conference.
Oh, no!
You mean...
Yes.
You don't mean...
Of course, he wouldn't take me. I said I'd sit in the hotel, I'd eat in McDonald's, but oh, no. Because he's taking her.
She said it was cello. Every evening I knew it wasn't cello.
A schoolgirl, a child.
She's got her A-levels.
Look, a little family party. Isn't that nice?
I think I'd better...
think I'm... Mr. Jolly slips away.
I haven't said anything about his work. I haven't said anything about his everlasting conservative meetings, but I'm not going to put up with this.
Which one's the hospital?
The hospital? I think it's along the bypass and...
Her father will kill her.
Can we see over the house? Is it open today?
Mrs. Wheel walks off along the main road as Mr. Wisely arrives on his Honda motorbike in full gear, clocking Mr. Jolly driving off.
Get in the car.
Gwenda rushes Mrs. Way back in.
I told you to stay in the car. Oh,
what a day. Where next?
Norwich.
Gwenda hurries round to the driver's side of the Cortina, then peers in.
Where's the other one?
Mum rushes out.
She's at a conference of headmasters with the headmaster. His wife's beside herself, and what about her A-levels? We've got to find her, Ted. You've got to talk to her. Get the car out. Oh, the car's been stolen. She's taken the car. She can't drive.
A police car pulls up. An officer calls to Gwenda.
Wisely, stolen car.
There.
Mrs. Wheel gets out. An irate Gwenda rushes round to the passenger side and bundles Mrs. Wheel away. As the officer gets out, donning his cap, yellow-helmeted Mum rides pillion. The officer approaches.
Now keep calm, don't go mad. Oh, what are you waiting for?
As the officer opens his mouth to speak, the Wisemans, oblivious to him, ride off.
Mother's blue teapot indeed, I said. Well, you should know, you were the last to see it. Then the next thing I know, she's eyeing the sherry glasses. Well, she's all...
The officer squats beside Gwenda's open window, but she drives off too. On the dual carriageway.
Up in the morning.
What?
You had a row with your boyfriend at 10 o'clock in the morning.
I had a fray.
Study periods are for study, Laura. Evening is the proper time to have rows with your boyfriend.
I couldn't see him in the evening.
Does the sun ever appear late over the horizon, saying, please, sir, the bus was full, the train was on strike?
His wife wouldn't let him go out in the evening.
If the sun depended on public transport to arrive each day...
His wife?
It's okay. He didn't get on with her.
Brian, appalled, shakes his head, then stares ahead at the road.
I suppose you have passed the driving test, Laura.
As good as.
What's that supposed to mean?
I only failed on one thing.
Right, pull in. Now, please, at once.
She pulls up on the hard shoulder. Brian squeezes out of the cramped Morris. He goes round to Laura's side and opens her door.
Let's get one thing straight at any rate.
She gets out and he takes her place.
Get in the other side.
A police car passes them and pulls up ahead on the hard shoulder. Its occupants look back.
Blue 1100.
A million blue 1100s.
Middle-aged man and a girl.
They exchange a look and start to reverse. Brian's in the driver's seat.
That's life, I'm afraid, Laura. You can drive, but you haven't passed the test. I, on the other hand, have passed the test, but wouldn't take it.
Brian looks over his shoulder to pull out onto the road and in so doing drives into the back of the reversing police car. An officer gets out of the police car to inspect the damage. He prods the Morris's wing mirror, which falls off onto a hubcap which has come adrift. The second officer gets out of the patrol car and goes to look at the damage. Brian gets out of the Morris and glances at his watch. It's 12:41. Mr. Jolly drives down the road in his Ford camper van and spots the Morris up ahead. Mr. Jolly looks in his wing mirror and sees Mr. and Mrs. Wisely just behind him. They and Mr. Jolly are overtaken by Gwenda and her old ladies in their Cortina. As they pass, Mr. Jolly's van obscures the Morris from Gwenda's view. One of the old ladies waves to Mr. Jolly. The Wisleys go past on their motorbike. By the roadside, the second officer gets into the patrol car. He drives it away from the Morris, revealing the full extent of the damage. Wincing, Brian catches Laura's hard stare and examines the front of the Morris.
Don't worry, we'll just pull the wing away from the wheel.
She'll be all right.
It'll all be covered, Laura. Your dad's insurance. I'm the one they'll summons. And the one I have to tell you, Dad.
Yes, and another thing. Have you stopped for petrol anywhere?
The wing comes off in Brian's hands.
Petrol?
He pretends to think very hard.
No, we filled it up yesterday.
The police officers don't look convinced. Brian looks thoughtful and nods.
Didn't we, Laura?
Laura reluctantly looks at the police officers and nods. The officers regard Brian, who shrugs and laughs thinly. After exchanging a look, the officers return to their patrol car and get in. Brian sighs with relief, then goes to the side of the road and tosses the damaged wing onto the verge.
No! That's part of our car!
Laura's angrily at Brian, who goes back to get it. Later, they're driving along with the wing tied to the roof rack of the car.
It's jangling all about. I can hear it. It's scratching the paint.
We must find a phone. Warn them I'm not going to be there until four.
Does the tie ever go out during a study period, saying, "Please, sir, I'm having a row with my boyfriend"?
Brian turns sharply to Laura.
Isn't someone on the staff, is it?
She gives him a look.
Slide well.
Laura concentrates on the road ahead. Brian tries to read her expression. She gives him another dismissive look. He jumps as they pass a broken-down car.
Mr. Jolly.
No. I wasn't anywhere near him.
You realise if you're not licensed, we're not insured.
12:59.
The Morris drives into a village.
Phone! Here we are!
Laura stops the car near a group of three phone boxes. Brian gets out of the car and rummages in his pockets for some change. He turns back to the Morris.
10p. Have you got 10p?
He impatiently clicks his fingers at Laura. She hands him a 10p piece. Brian hurries to the first phone box and finds a bread delivery man in it.
All right, then in the third race, give me number four for a win and number seven.
Sorry.
Brian goes into the second phone box and lifts the receiver. He's about to dial when he notices the line's dead. He taps the cradle and waves the receiver about, but to no avail. Irritated, he slams the phone down and marches off to the third phone box. Inside, he listens to the receiver and, hearing a dialing tone, proceeds to dial a number. Halfway through dialing, he makes a mistake and has to start again. Laura watches him irritably from the car. Brian glares back at her and she turns away. Brian then consults his watch. Brian shoves the 10p into the slot, only to find it won't go. He pushes harder on the coin, putting his weight behind it, but without success. Eventually, he hangs up and marches out of the phone box. Outside, he kicks it in frustration, then sees the bread delivery man is still in the first box. Exasperated, Brian goes back into the third box. An old lady watches from a window across the road.
They're vandalising those phones again, Pat!
All right, Mum, just go.
When's lunch?
Now, Granny's just getting it. Tell Tom and Boo lunch is on the table.
The phones, Pat! They're at the phones again.
Just put my woolly on.
Brian makes his call.
University of Norwich.
Once again, he tries to push the 10p into the slot. It still won't go, so he tries to force it in with the receiver, bashing on the back of the receiver with his hand. Eventually, he gives up and hangs up. He goes to take the coin, but finds it's got jammed halfway into the slot. After a brief struggle, he yanks it out and steps out of the phone box. Laura indicates the first box, which is now free, and he runs to it, raising his fist in triumph. The old lady watches.
A girl and a boy. He's showing off his muscles and she's egging him on.
I'll try and keep them talking till the police get here.
Yes?
Pat goes out of the house and marches across the road, in the phone box.
University of Norwich.
Thank God. Look, I'm calling long distance and I've only got one 10p, so could you please take a message and pass it on to the secretary of the headmaster's conference?
University of Norwich?
Yes, our annual meeting's being held there. It starts at 5. Would you tell him I was supposed to be there at 3?
Hello? University of Norwich.
Can't you hear me? I said, would you tell him I'm going to be slightly...
Put your money in the box, caller.
I've put my money in the box. It's eaten the money. I haven't got any more money. Right.
Still holding the receiver, Brian steps out of the phone box, turns round and kicks the phone. He then smashes the receiver against the cradle. Unimpressed, Pat watches. Embarrassed, Laura turns away. Brian turns around and sees Pat watching him.
How old are you?
It's out of order.
Pat suddenly breaks into a smile.
I'll tell you how old you are. You're 2 years and one day older than me.
I mean, it took the money and... Pat?
Well, fancy meeting you like this.
Good God.
You don't live here.
No.
I don't live here. I don't even live in England. I'm just seeing my mum.
Isn't that amazing? Well.
Anyway, Ran, you don't have to tell me what you're up to these days because I can see. You're late.
No. It was the third telephone box in a row.
Still late for everything, are you, Ran?
No, I'm not late, matter of fact.
What was it this time, Ran? And buses on strike, got the wrong train.
I'm not late.
I'd say come and have lunch.
Unfortunately.
All right, Ran. Just your luck, isn't it? Running into someone you haven't seen for 20 years when you're late already.
No, I'm not late. I'm merely in a hurry.
Well, give me a kiss and I'll let you run.
She grabs hold of Brian and gives him a kiss. Her mother watches wide-eyed from across the road. As they embrace, Brian sneaks a quick look at his watch.
Lovely to see you again, Brian.
He shrugs.
Come on, I'll give you Mum's number. You can phone me when you've got a moment.
Oh, right.
You won't to Laura. This. But your dad and I were at training college together, and he was
Pat,
late...
Pat, could I make a phone call?
He was late the first time he took me out. He was late every time he took me out. He was late the day he collected his diploma. Oh, he hasn't told you about all that. Haven't you told her about your murky past, then? He's not even listening.
Brian spots a police car pulling up.
I said you're not even listening.
Suppose not.
Brian hurries round to the driver's door of the Morris and pulls it open. Laura sees the police and gets out.
Well, I can see your mind's on other things. I mustn't hold you out.
Yes, we must be on our way.
No. Oh, she won't let poor old Dad drive, will she?
No, I won't.
She's lovely, Brian. A real glint in her eye.
Yes. Pat, can you drive?
Great to see you anyway. Can I drive?
You passed your test. You got a license?
Yes. What's all this about?
Have a drive. Go on, see what you think. All right?
Laura nods. The policeman finds the broken telephone. Pat walks round to the driver's door of the Morris.
I'd like to know what you think. Come on.
Well, I thought you were late.
I'm not late.
Funny man you are, Brian.
The policeman inspects the other two phone boxes. Pat gets into the driver's seat. Brian sits in the back.
I haven't driven in this country for 20 years.
Never mind, off you go.
Married a dentist down under.
Right.
Just brought the kids over to stay with Mum. We were going to have lunch.
Right, let's go.
You've got time for lunch, haven't you? I bet you're starving. I've got one your age.
Well, I am.
Later, get the drive over first.
All right. Once round the block, then, close your eyes and pray.
The policeman approaches.
Isn't it?
Right.
On the right.
Left.
Right.
Just as the policeman bends down to the driver's window, Pat drives off. Pat's mother hurries out of the house and runs to the policeman.
Stop them! Stop them!
Well, they did the phone.
The phone, yes, but now they've kidnapped my daughter.
It's lovely.
What?
The car.
All right.
Brian looks anxiously out of the back window to see if the police are following.
There's perhaps something not quite right up here somewhere.
That's the wing.
The wing? He pulled it off.
That'll kill me.
Pat's expression becomes troubled.
It's Dad's car. It's not his car. He's not my father. He's Mr. Stimpson.
Blue light flashing, the police give chase.
Why did you tell her I was your daughter?
Daughter?
To me? No, son. I haven't got a daughter.
Pat's eyes widen in horror as she hears this.
Laura's one of my girls. One of my six followers. She's very kindly driving me to Norwich. It's a headmaster's conference. I'm a headmaster now.
Yes. Well, I'll say goodbye then, Brian.
You can't stop here.
It's all right. I'll walk back.
Please come.
It's your life, Brian. I don't want to say anything. I just don't want to get involved.
Keep going.
We'll be out in the country in a minute. My children don't know where I am. We're just sitting down to lunch.
It's all right. We'll find a bus stop.
Find a bus stop? Here's a bus stop.
You can't stop at a bus stop.
Well, where am I going?
Stay down.
They screech out of a T-junction, badly cutting up a lorry.
Well done.
Hooting?
Oh, don't mind him.
I don't know where we are. I don't know where we're going.
I'll tell you. Hold on.
Brian consults an atlas. The police car is hidden just behind the lorry.
The same thing.
You feel sorry for them, don't you?
You'd start off in evening dress and silver darned shoes and end up running, your skirt in your hand and your heel down a grating.
And then they turn around and scream at you.
Next left, be posted to Northampton.
Northampton?
We'll put you on the train.
What do you mean you'll put me on the train? They're sitting round the table, they're waiting to start lunch.
Get a move on then.
The police overtake the lorry.
It's like being 19 again. I hated being 19.
Pat overtakes a truck in front, losing the police.
Fine.
We shouldn't be doing this kind of speed. Not in a car like this.
Right, right.
Listen to it, it's coming to pieces.
Terrible, terrible.
Now where am I going? I'm going left, am I?
Right, right.
Right?
Pat goes to turn left, then slews back to the right to carry straight on. The police go off down the road to the left.
All right, 10 minutes, we'll be in Northampton.
Northampton was left.
Northampton?
You said right.
I said left.
Look, Brian, don't you shout at me.
Can't anyone tell left from right?
She's doing her best.
Right. Just take the next left, will you?
I'll get straight out of the car.
Can't get out of the car now until we get to Northampton.
Always late. Always trying to make it my fault. Always screaming at me.
I was not screaming. I was merely saying left, left.
And now they've made you headmaster. It's like putting a shark in charge of a swimming pool.
Left.
Laura smirks.
Left, left, left!
Pat takes an abrupt left turn.
What's this? This isn't going anywhere.
It's going back to the Northampton Road.
They'll be out of their minds.
Just keep absolutely calm and turn left and left again. So, left here.
They take a turn.
Thank you. Well done. Now, we just go around the next corner and...
They're in a narrow country lane with a herd of cows coming the other way.
Now what?
Don't worry. We just go back.
Back?
Right. Reverse.
How did this happen to me?
In reverse gear.
Flustered by Brian's mithering, Pat accidentally turns the windscreen wipers on.
Put it into reverse.
Pat struggles.
Know where reverse is, Laura?
Laura puts the car into gear.
Good. Well done. Come on, then. Come on. Come on. Come on. Well done. Come on, stop!
Pat stops just in time to avoid a collision with a lorry coming up behind them. They find themselves jammed between the herd of cows and the lorry. Brian thinks.
This is a historic moment. Little did I dream that I should be sitting here.
Laura winds the passenger window down and looks out at a passing cow.
I'm going to have lunch.
The cow licks its chops. Brian leans forward to talk to Pat.
Into the field.
Pat looks alarmed.
Just do as I say.
The Morris bumps through the grassy field along a rough track.
We'll get something to eat in Northampton. We're going to hit the road in about 100 yards.
I know this is wrong. I know it. I know it.
The Morris trundles over the pale green sun-kissed fields, heading for a hill. Pat, who wears her long brown hair clipped off her face, steers precariously along the track. The Morris goes up the hill and skirts the edge of a thick green wood.
It'll be just beyond that next hedge.
The Morris passes through a gate and into the next field. The muddy path peters out and Pat brings the car to a halt, gazing out across the green fields and rolling hills. Laura shoots Pat a look. Brian stares out across the open fields, then consults the map, which is open on his lap.
Just beyond the next hedge. Look, I can see the cars, I can see them moving. Right there.
There's no track. We've come to the end of the track.
We don't need a track. It's grass. Come on!
Pat's face crumples. Starting the engine, she begins to sob. A bearded farmer with a flat cap on is driving up the next field on a tractor when he spots the Morris travelling down the slope through the long grass. He turns the tractor around and drives over to a tall hedge that divides the two fields, stopping to watch the Morris's bumpy progress. He climbs out of his seat and sits on the back of the tractor to look over the hedge. The Morris motors down the hill, leaving tyre tracks in the grass.
Perhaps I sound a little old-fashioned, but you know, we live in a world where time is becoming not less important, but ever more so. Imagine a spacecraft running late. It might miss its orbit completely and find itself wandering off into the trackless depths of the universe.
The Morris is stuck in thick mud at the bottom of the hill. Pat revs the engine and the front left wheel below the missing wing spins uselessly in the wet bog, spattering the passenger window with mud.
Nightmare! Nightmare!
Hold it, Pat, hold it. Let's just have a quiet think.
Never going to get home!
Stop it! You'll break the engine!
Thank you. Thank you. Now, it's 5 to 2.
I'm hungry.
You're hungry. We're all hungry. We can't eat now because we're in the middle of a field. So, we have to adapt to our circumstances.
Ryan steps out into thick mud. He gazes at his soggy shoes, then straightens up sharply.
I wanted to be in Norwich at 3 to greet everyone as they arrive. I can't be there at 3, so instead, I want to be there at 5 in time to deliver my speech. This is how mankind has evolved from the primeval slime, by adapting to circumstances. We can't go forwards, so we'll go backwards instead. Put it in reverse for her, Laura. I'll push. Right? Right!
Brian leans on the bonnet and pushes with all his might as Pat puts her foot down. Laura covers her ears as the engine protests. Brian grits his teeth as he gets plastered in wet mud. Brian stands up. The girls stare at his filthy suit and face. Laura stifles a smile. Brian drops his head into his hand. Laura indicates his muddy face.
No. Thank you. Stay here. Don't move.
Pat and Laura exchange a look. Brian squelches away from the car, then stops abruptly. He plods back through the mud and kicks out of the car in frustration, slipping over and falling face down in the mire. Brian picks himself up and steps forward, going back to pluck his shoes out of the mud. Brian sets off up the hill and approaches the farmer, who's looking over the hedge that conceals his tractor from Brian. The farmer's eating.
Can you tell me, do you know, is there anyone round here with a tractor?
Won my bet anyway. Watched you go down the meadow there. Bet myself a cheese sandwich, you wouldn't get as far as the bottom.
Munching his sandwich.
We're stuck. We need a tractor to pull us out.
Having a day in the country, are you?
Not really. Is there a farm near here?
Getting close to nature?
Right, right. We're in rather a hurry, you see. I have to be in Norwich by 5.
Norwich? You going to Norwich?
Yes. So, if we can just find a tractor...
What? Shortcut, is it?
Lost our way. So we must quickly find a tractor.
Well, my advice is this.
The farmer chews reflectively.
Yes?
If you're going this way...
Yes?
Find a tractor.
A tractor, yes?
Stay on the bloody thing all the way to Norwich.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Brian walks away.
Something else?
Yes, thank you.
Know what I'm sitting on?
A bomb, I hope.
All right, my old dear. You look that way, and I look this. And I bet you, a jam tart, I find a tractor first.
The farmer stuffs the tart into his mouth as Brian heads away over the hill, then starts up his tractor and drives down to the bottom of the next field, pulling up behind the stranded Morris.
Norwich, I believe.
Pat sticks her head out of the window.
Dodge the traffic anyway.
He fetches a tow chain. Brian rings a bell next to an old wooden door set in an ancient stone wall.
Come on, come on.
Someone opens a hatch in the door.
Oh, for God's sake, turn the record player down.
Ah, right, there you are. Now, a tractor. I'm looking for a tractor. You don't have a tractor here, do you?
The hatch closes, the wooden door opens and Brian steps in.
Sorry, but it is rather urgent. I have to be in Norwich by...
Brian stares at a bearded monk in white robes who's locking the door. The monk nods and sets off through the grounds.
Of course, a monastery. I might have guessed.
The farmer uses his tractor to pull the Morris out of the mud. A silent monk pads between rooms in the monastery. Mud-smeared Brian is sitting quietly at a long polished table in the monk's sparsely decorated refectory. The prior of the monastery enters and Brian looks up expectantly. The grey-haired prior closes the door, folds his robes around himself and sits at another long wooden table. He puts his hands in the prayer position and gazes inquiringly at Brian.
Have they found a tractor?
The prior shakes his head. Brian stares down at the polished wooden table.
Well, it doesn't matter. It wasn't important.
The prior nods and smiles benevolently. Brian heaves a heavy sigh.
I'm sorry to let them down, that's all. It doesn't matter to me.
Brian gives a tight smile, then looks down.
It was important for the school. Would have meant so much to the children. Well, I suppose we couldn't ring for a taxi.
The prior shakes his head.
No phone.
The prior shrugs apologetically.
It would have meant a lot to my mother, of course.
The prior nods.
If she'd been alive.
The prior nods again.
I'd be happy to enter a monastery and never speak again.
We speak.
Brian's startled.
I'm sorry, I just assumed...
The prior shakes his head. Brian gazes down at the table. He absent-mindedly smooths back his hair and rubs his eye, smearing mud all over his cheek. The prior looks at him, concerned.
What do you think I should do then?
Have a bath, perhaps?
A monk on a bicycle heads into the grounds of the monastery, followed by the farmer towing the Morris. They pass a monk with a wheelbarrow and another working the land. The monk on wheels gets off his bike in a yard. One monk is standing with two horses, another works at an anvil. The bike-riding monk walks over to the monk at the anvil and points at the Morris as it's towed into the yard.
They're women.
The farmer unattaches the tow chain and goes up to the driver's window of the Morris.
The old boyfriend you girls have found yourselves takes you off for a bit of nature study in the country, then slips off and enters a monastery.
Pat clenches her jaw.
Right, I'm off.
Mr. Stimson!
Are you coming with me or aren't you? It's our car!
I'm not waiting!
Laura jumps out of the car. Laura runs around the large stone building. Monks toiling in the garden stare at the young woman. A beekeeper respectfully removes his hat. Laura stares at them, then runs off.
Mr. Stimson!
The beekeeper fights off bees. Brian's dirty clothes lie on a wooden chair outside the bathroom. A monk comes along, deposits a long white vestment and sandals outside the door, and picks up Brian's dirty suit and shoes. The monk leans closer to the bathroom door and smiles as he hears Brian singing happily. He then heads off down the hall. Brian lies relaxing in the bathtub.
Once relent his first avowed intent to be.
Brian listens carefully. Laura runs around the monastery in her black skirt and belted white shirt.
Do but themselves confess.
He opens the window.
Francie, one way!
They can't find a tractor!
We've got one! It's pulled us out! What are you doing?
I'm having a bath! You've got one!
She's going!
I'll be right down!
Laura runs off to the yard. Several monks have gathered at the monastery windows to watch her, including an eager young monk who struggles to get a better view. Two monks and the farmer push the Morris as Pat tries to start it. Laura runs up.
Well, he's having a bath.
A bath? Why not a sauna and massage as well? Again!
Ryan runs out of the monastery, struggling to pull the white vestment over his head. Laura runs straight past.
Nixon!
Here is she!
She's gone! I said he's having a bath and she went!
Stop her!
It's our car!
Laura and Brian charge off after the Morris, startling an older monk on the way. The young monk at the window eggs them on, but quietens when he receives looks from the others. The prior watches the chase with silent disapproval.
Into the light!
An older lady in a brown raincoat and matching beret is coming down the lane as Laura runs past, chased by Brian in his monk's vestment. She tuts and walks on. Laura makes it to the main road at the end of the lane and turns back to look for Brian.
Ah, can't. Can't. Sandal.
Brian sits in the lane.
The road, anyway.
Brian loosens his sandal.
It's not the despair, Laura. I can stand the despair. It's the hope.
Laura points down the road.
There!
Laura has spotted the Morris in the distance. She sets off with Brian following. A police car is parked in front of the Morris. An officer stands with Pat. He's on his radio.
Blue Morris 1100, registration number Romeo Delta X-ray 364 Juliet. We've also got Mrs. Garden, reported missing, believed kidnapped. State of shock, otherwise appears all right. No sign of the girl.
She's at the monastery.
Oh, she's apparently in a monastery. No sign of the male suspect.
He's in the bath.
He's in the bath? In the monastery? In the bath? In a monastery. Gonna take a bit of sorting out, this one. We'll bring Mrs. Garden in anyway. We're charging her with taking and driving away, driving a vehicle in an unroadworthy condition, exceeding the speed limit, and assaulting a police officer.
His partner nurses a black eye.
Nearly there!
Brian staggers after her.
Slip, Laura, that's all. Sit right, bend left. Why didn't work?
Going.
The police car and the Morris drive off down the road.
Gone.
Laura shoots Brian a fed-up look. Brian wanders wearily over to the grass verge, carrying part of his monk's outfit, a long scarf-like white chasuble, and plonks himself down, head in hands. Laura trails after him and sits down close by.
I've lied for this, Laura. I've stolen. I've taken you out of school. Well, I suppose this is a form of education. It's an education for me, Laura. You still haven't had any lunch. Who gets something?
Brian forgets he's dressed as a monk and reaches for his wallet.
Suit.
He nods, then glances at his wrist for his watch.
In the bathroom.
Even lost the time.
Laura moves closer and lays a comforting hand on his arm. A clock in the hall at the headmaster's conference clicks on to 15:33. The conference director checks his watch and searches for Brian amongst the crowd of other headmasters.
Geography, but he can read a balance sheet.
Our merchant bankers thought we could reckon on 15%.
The Earl Boys Association raised a quarter of a million in 3 months.
No, our people suggested floating the school off.
We are offering an A-level in classic Arabic, of course.
And we hope the school mosque will be finished in time for Ramadan.
One in the eye for Millfield, anyway.
We're also planning a Deutschmark offshore fund.
We have to be prepared for any political event.
A couple of million, but we do have the same accountants as Mick Jagger, so I hope it won't be.
So anyway, an air crew came down and checked out our security arrangements, with particular reference to the bombs.
Did you ring the school?
They say he left at 10.
He said he was going to be here by 3.
The conference director checks the time. Mr. Jolly.
Sorry, I'm just. I don't know whether.
He wanders off.
What about some governors make these days? Or is that the state sector?
Chap over there came on a motorcycle by the look of it. What?
They watch Mrs. Wisely go up to her husband.
Good God. Some woman. How did she get in?
Excuse me.
And at East? I'm taking the classical 6 to Jamaica.
Can I help you at all?
Where is she? Where's Laura?
I'm sorry?
Our daughter. He's going mad. He'll have one of his attacks.
Oh dear. Your daughter. Well, let's go and have a look for her, shall we? I'm sorry, someone should explain. We don't bring wives and families.
Wives? No, you have 18-year-old girls who are doing their A-levels. I've never heard anything like it.
Yes, well, let's go and discuss it in peace.
And where is he? Where's Mr. Stimson?
Mr. Stimson? Ah, Mr. Stimson. Well,
I think you'll like our new prospectus. It's been done by Sarchi and Sarchi.
Excuse me, one moment.
Anyway, we're hoping the new solarium will give our sixth form a bit more appeal at the top end of the market.
I'm so sorry. Would you take these good people upstairs to the room on the corridor on the left?
Terrific. Delighted.
See that they have some tea. I'll be with you in one moment. Can I help you?
I'm looking for Mr. Stimson.
Oh, we're all looking for Mr. Stimson. Oh, come with me.
Wait a moment.
Okay. So, of course, I said I don't drink sherry. I'm a total abstainer, as you very well know. But I do not see why the sherry glasses should go to Pam just because she drinks.
Why don't you have a cup of tea?
I told you to stay in the car.
Oh, you're another of Mr. Stimson's party, are you? Pour them some tea and take them upstairs along the corridor on the left.
Very well.
What are you doing here?
Oh, I'm just. I'll fetch you a cup of.
Mr. Jolly wanders off. The director talks to a fellow head.
Excuse me?
He seems to have brought his entire family.
There's another one here.
Let me guess. You're looking for Mr. Stimson.
I'm looking for the head doctor.
Right, well, let's see what we can find upstairs.
Mrs. Way.
Mr. Stimson!
Am I? I don't know where I am or what I am.
I know the feeling.
The headmaster with a stripy tie shows the Wisleys into a TV lounge.
Don't make yourselves comfortable in here. I'll bring Mr. Stimson to you just as soon as I find him. Terrible bore, I know, but it is a private meeting.
Mrs. Trellis and Gwenda approach.
Fair temptation to put a sherry glass in our hand.
Mr. Stimson's party. In here.
Stripy tie guides them into the TV lounge.
More for you. Terrific. Super.
The most exciting day.
A balding man and his colleague approach the conference director in the entrance hall.
Detective Sergeant Rice, Norwich CID. I believe you have a Mr. Brian Stimson here.
Nothing wrong, I hope.
We'd just like a word with him, sir.
Well, he hasn't arrived yet. We're waiting for him.
We'll wait too, then, if we may.
I'll bring you some tea.
Stimson supporters, pal. In here.
Stripy Tie shows the detectives into the TV lounge.
You take sugar?
The director and the dark-haired head.
Police looking for him now.
Oh, no. Little boys?
Well, if he's not here by 5.
I suppose one of us could say a few words.
Yes, I could have a go, if you like. Something about money, perhaps. Usually a reliable standby.
I hope he's not lying in some ditch.
Oh, absolutely.
It was going to be the start of so much, Laura. I was going to go into politics. I used to think, when I become Secretary of State for Education. Yes. Don't laugh.
Brian's lying on his back with his eyes shut beside the road. Laura's further on down the road trying to thumb a lift. Several cars go past without stopping.
I thought I didn't mind. When I was in the monastery, I thought I'd resign myself to it, but really, I knew I'd still got time, you see.
He's lying under a road sign.
Funny how you always know secretly when the last moment is and when it's gone.
He looks at the cow's crossing sign.
Ass. I'm mine, Laura. I'm mine.
A silver sports Porsche coupe speeds past Laura. It stops further up the road and reverses.
Mr. Stimson!
Perhaps I could just lie here.
Mr. Stimson!
Brian sits up and sees the Porsche.
Wait!
Laura chats to the driver, a man with short frizzy hair wearing a grey suit. She beckons to Brian, who heaves himself up off the verge and runs towards the Porsche.
Come on then, darling. What's the trouble?
Does this seat him up?
Don't worry about the car. It's brand new. Only got 12 miles on the clock.
What? You pull this lever?
I go about. What's...
Brian gets in the back.
We're together.
I don't believe this.
He's got to get to Norwich.
Well, I've seen them pull some stunts, but a monk.
They look round at Brian, who shrugs. Laura shrugs too.
OK, a monk. What can I do?
He sets off. Speeding along a leafy country road.
I'm surprised at you, though, Father. Putting a bird out at the side of the road, hiding in the ditch. Does your father superior know you travel around like this?
Laura turns to Brian.
You! Speed! Like that!
What?
Laura attracts Brian's attention. She points to the driver's suit, pulls up her own shirt collars and points at Brian's robes. Brian gets her drift and shakes his head frantically. Laura nods and grins.
Frankly, Father, I'm shocked. Do you know that? I'm not easily shocked, but I'm shocked.
Can we stop?
What?
Stop a moment. By these trees.
The driver pulls into a lay-by near a gate leading to a wooded area.
What's the trouble?
Go for a little walk.
Go for a walk?
In the woods.
Laura gets out.
You want to go for a walk?
Don't you want to come?
What do you mean? What?
No one around.
Brian has his face covered.
Oh, this beats everything. Sorry about this, Father. 5 minutes, that's all. Pick a few flowers.
Laura pushes the seat forward and pats Brian.
Come on, then.
Him?
Oh, no.
You want him to come? You want Father there?
Come on. The sun's out.
Laura skips blithely across the road into the shadow of the trees. Brian creeps out of the car, head down.
Your world, isn't it?
Laura stands in a grassy clearing, eyeing a squirrel on a branch. Brian and the Porsche driver stand apart from each other, facing Laura.
Look, I'll be frank. I'm out of my depth.
We could take our clothes off.
The squirrel scuttles off. Brian turns his back. Laura glances cheekily over her shoulder at the driver of the Porsche, who shifts uncomfortably under her gaze.
Go on, then.
You first.
He loosens his tie, pulls it off and drops it on the ground with a flourish. Laura smiles encouragingly.
Go on.
The driver darts a look at Brian, then takes off his jacket, folds it loosely and lays it on the sun-dappled grass.
Shoes.
He pulls off his white loafers and stands holding them.
Now you.
Now, Mr. Stimson.
Come on, then.
Brian cringes with shame.
Oh, now look, I'm not doing a solo.
The driver starts to put his loafers on. With his back still turned to Laura, Brian pulls off his vestment, stripping down to his boxer shorts. Spurred on by Brian's display, the driver takes his trousers off. Laura gathers up Brian's clothes.
Come on, be a monk.
Laura dumps the monk's outfit in front of the driver, who's down to his pants and vest, then scoops up the driver's clothes and shoes and hands them to Brian, who's still slumped in the clearing with his back to them. Laura smiles at Brian as they watch the driver pull on the white vestment. As the driver pulls the chasuble over his head, Laura nudges Brian and they run off through the trees.
Bang!
The driver goes after them, the vestment billowing out behind him.
Find the key!
Brian searches the driver's trouser pockets.
I knew it was a stunt the moment she got in the car!
Laura's at the car. Brian has the keys.
Give it to me!
A man weeing behind a tree watches the drama unfold with astonishment. The driver catches up with Brian.
£300, that suit cost me!
The driver and Brian pull the suit. The sleeve rips off.
You've torn it! Monk! Monk! You've torn the sleeve off a 300 guinea suit! Oh no! Not the car!
The driver stands in their way.
It's a customer! It's not insurance!
Brian covers his eyes as Laura reverses at speed. The driver falls over, then leaps back up again.
Please! Come back! Come back!
The Porsche races off. The driver, who's still wearing his robes, marches over to the onlooker who's emerged from behind the tree.
From the moment she stuck her thumb up!
Laura's driving the Porsche. Brian has put the suit on and is fiddling with the ripped sleeve.
Don't worry about the sleeve, we'll get some sellotape. You got some money now. Fill in the pockets, how much have we got?
Brian pulls a wallet out of the top jacket pocket and finds a wad of notes inside.
Hundreds and hundreds! We could do anything. We could get Chinese takeaways. I saw this film on television once, and there was this bloke and this girl, and they went round everywhere in this car robbing these banks and things.
Brian shakes his head. He notices the speedometer flickering above 80 and puts his seatbelt on.
I'll get you there. I'm a better driver than her anyway.
Brian stares at his bare wrist.
I'm gonna take this watch as well. Do you know what's worrying me? The way I always seem to get involved with older men.
Brian gazes at Laura, aghast. Laura overtakes a blue van on a bend. Brian ducks as an oncoming red saloon is forced to swerve onto the grass verge to avoid them. The Porsche races on. The headmasters have gathered in a conference hall for the chairman's address. A clock on the wall reads 1656. The director's standing with his colleague near the stage.
No point in waiting beyond five, is there?
I'm going to talk about charitable status and moral leadership.
Mrs. Way wanders down the central aisle.
Keep those damned women locked up.
Doddery Mrs. Way makes for a seat amongst the headmasters.
So kind of you. In everyone's way as usual. I'll just sit myself down.
Oh dear. Lost again, are we?
Quite lost.
Let's see if we can find your friends.
Excuse me, but I'm not shouting at you.
Excuse me, but you are.
Excuse me, but I'm merely trying to get it into your head that he is not here.
Oh, here they all are.
So when will he be here?
I don't know.
Debating about which word to do.
Can't you stop these people wandering into the hall?
No, I can't. They keep wanting to go to the loo.
Mrs. Wheel needs to go to the ladies.
Do you see? And then they don't come back.
Call yourself a doctor.
Gwenda goes too.
To escort them to the loo.
Again, are we?
Not you. You've been.
He grabs Mrs. Way.
Director Laundryman, Regional Crime Squad.
Stimson.
If I might have a few words with him.
In here.
Stimson?
What are you doing here, George?
Stimson.
Taking and driving an assault?
Nah. Taking and driving and kidnapping.
Right. Inside, then.
What's going on here,
George? Let's keep the door closed.
The conference director on stage in the hall.
Gentlemen, if I might have your attention for one moment. Thank you. Now, the time is exactly 5 o'clock, and I'm afraid I have some bad news for you. Our chairman, Mr. Stimson...
The back door's open.
Here.
Brian strides down the central aisle in his too short grey suit, with his head held high and his chest puffed out. Laura scuttles down the aisle, following him to the stage. Brian takes his place at a lectern and surveys the other masters sitting in orderly rows before him. Laura's loitering on the stage behind Brian. The conference director pulls up a chair for her and she sits. Mr. Jolly's in the audience. He gazes up at Laura, who shuffles her chair closer to Brian. The conference director resumes his seat in the front row. Brian's jacket sleeve is held on with sellotape. He holds up his hands for a bit of hush.
This is a historic moment.
I stand before you today as your new chairman, something that some of us never expected to see happen in our lifetime. We have come a long way together to be where we are today.
Laura grins. Long.
Who is she?
Long, long way. And at this point, I should perhaps explain that during the course of my journey, I have become separated.
Jolly looks up.
Separated from the text of my speech. So I hope you will forgive me if I am a little disconnected.
Brian's sleeve peels away from the rest of the jacket. Brian claps his hand over it and tries to surreptitiously stick it back on. One of the heads lifts his specs to peer at Brian.
So I stand here today, and I look out there, and what do I see?
He sees Mr. Jolly, who gives him an embarrassed little wave. Brian frowns thoughtfully at Mr. Jolly. Laura lowers her head and moves her chair to hide behind Brian.
I see myself. I see myself as I was then.
Jolly gulps nervously.
An obscure master from an overawed comprehensive school.
Brian notices people staring at Laura.
Right, so what was I doing there? I was amazed to find herself... I was amazed to find myself invited to become one of your very select handful of additional women.
Mrs. Wisely has burst in through the back doors. She's bundled out.
I was even more amazed still at what I was listening to, because what I was listening to was...
Mrs. Wheeler comes in through the back doors. Everyone looks round.
Come in, then, if you're coming. No, because what I was listening to was...
She's joined by Mrs. Way.
More of you out there?
Mrs. Way points at the doors and goes out to fetch Mrs. Trellis. The assembled heads glance at one another and gaze up at Brian on stage. Mrs. Way leads Mrs. Trellis in by the hand.
All right, find yourself somewhere to sit.
Some of the other headmasters look affronted as the three old ladies settle amongst them.
There I was, listening to the headmasters of schools with great and glorious names.
Stripey Tie has burst in looking for the old ladies. Stripey Tie goes after Mrs. Trellis.
Oh, sit down!
Stripey Tie turns to Brian.
Yes, we're all waiting for you.
Stripey Tie looks around at his peers, then sits down next to Mrs. Trellis.
Right, so there I was, listening to the headmasters of schools with great and glorious names as they, kicked round a variety of weighty topics, as they expatiated upon a variety of weighty balls.
One of the heads cracks up.
Someone finds that funny.
What he said, what I think he said.
There's no need to whisper.
Please, come up here and explain the joke to the entire school.
Everyone stares.
And who's that creaking?
Mr. Wisely's come in his biking gear.
Come on, let's get it over with. There's a seat down here, look.
Brian leans on his lectern and watches Mr. Wisely stride down the aisle, carrying his helmet under his arm.
Long way to Norwich, was it?
Long way to that seat, too.
The conference director stands up and everyone shifts along on the front row for Mr. Wisely.
Make yourself comfortable then. Get all the creaking over.
He crosses his legs.
No rush. You've got all the time in the world.
The clock clicks on.
Time. Right, because I should like, before I pass on to other matters, to sound a note of warning.
Mrs. Wisely bursts in with D.I. Rice.
And still they come. I was just talking, you might be interested to hear, about time. I was going to say that we all understood that lateness was a discourtesy to others. But I'm beginning to wonder.
They head for seats.
You're beginning to wonder too, are you? So perhaps the rest of us could turn round and face the front, and we'll all wonder together.
D.I. Laundryman comes in next.
Right. Because I'm beginning to wonder... if I'd be the only person in the world who would be slightly surprised if the tide came wandering in half an hour after the lesson had started.
slammed all the doors, and stood there gazing round the room, trying to find some chums to sit next to, while the rest of us patiently wait to get on with the day's events. Perhaps I sound a little old-fashioned, but imagine a spacecraft that was endlessly interrupted by latecomers and flapping door.
The doors open again.
Just possibly go completely mad. It might just possibly lift off the launch pad and go screaming off into the depths of the universe and never be seen again until the end of time.
Red-faced, Brian notices his wife standing just inside the doors staring at him. All the other headmasters turn around and stare at her too, then back to face Brian. Brian turns round to glance at Laura, who gives him a sweet smile. Horror-struck, Brian turns to look back at Gwenda, who's quietly fuming at the back of the hall. Like a rat caught in a trap, Brian gazes at Laura again. She smiles. Brian stares over at Mr. Jolly, who shifts uncomfortably. Brian turns back to look at Laura, who hangs her head with a guilty expression. Brian stares at Gwenda, then shrugs. His torn jacket slides off and plops onto the floor. He's spurred back into action by the clock, clicking on to 17:10.
Right, hymn 122, He Who Would Valiant Be.
Brian nods at Mr. Jolly. The headmasters in the front few rows turn round to stare at Jolly. Brian nods again, and Mr. Jolly starts to make his way to the front. Brian gestures for the assembled headmasters to rise. Jolly comes to the right of the stage but finds that there's no piano. He runs his fingers along an invisible keyboard and shakes his head at Brian, who rolls his eyes and mumbles. Brian nods at the conference director to begin the song. The director, who's sitting next to Mr. Wisely, frowns, then, prompted by a second nod from Brian, shakes his head and begins.
He who would valiant be, gainst all disaster.
Brian turns sharply away from the lectern and strides down from the stage and along the aisle with his head held high. Laura watches him striding through his peers in the white loafers with one stripy shirt sleeve showing. Brian nods smartly to Gwenda, who steps aside, and he barrels out of the hall through the double doors. Gwenda purses her lips and follows him. Laura snatches up Brian's fallen jacket sleeve. D.I. Laundryman and his colleague hurry out, followed by Laura, Mrs. Wisely, Mrs. Wheeler, the conference director, D.S. Rice, Jolly and the others. Some of the headmasters race out after them, others bundle over to the windows like schoolboys to watch the fun. Brian strides out of the conference building to be greeted by several police cars and officers. Laura's held back while Brian's questioned. Brian stands quietly amidst the chaos. Inside the conference hall, the crowds at the windows turn to listen to Mrs. Way, who's sitting with an older headmaster, singing.
Take this away. It will be always mine. The sun and the wine.
Outside, Brian's put into one of the squad cars as Gwenda tries to gather up Mrs. Trellis and Mrs. Wheeler. D.I. Laundryman guides Laura into an unmarked police car while her parents remonstrate with him. The headmasters charge outside to watch Brian being driven away.
Driving away a silver Porsche sports coupe. Furthermore, there are also various charges relating to the theft of certain items of gents' clothing, including an ecclesiastical vestment and of a wallet containing approximately £1,230 in cash. Do you wish to say anything? You're not obliged to say anything unless you wish to do so. But whatever you say will be taken down in writing and may be given in evidence.
All right, right!
The squad car swerves.
No, no, left!
Brian's squad car careers onto the main road, forcing a lorry to jackknife and lose its load, and an oncoming car to swerve violently. ITFC audio description by Lonnie Evans.
Mm-hmm.